Okay, before long, we'll be beginning the Seder by saying, Halach Ma'anya. This is the bread of our poverty, of our affliction. Dacha Avotana Barad Mitzvayim that our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. Kol Dich Ven Yesa V'Yechal, all hungry people should come and eat. Kol Dich, huh? Tov, good almost Pesach. Soon we'll be sitting at the Seder and we'll be saying Halach Ma'anya. This is the blade of our affliction, our poverty. Da'achalu avatanu ba'arad mitzvayim, that our ancestors ate, our fathers ate in the land of Egypt. Kodich fin yese v'yechal, let everyone who's hungry come and eat. Kodich yese v'yifsach, let anybody in need come and do Pesach with us. Hashtahacha, now we're now, we're here. L'shana ba ba'arad Yisrael, next year in Eretz Yisrael. Hashta avde, we're slaved. L'shana ba b'nei chora, next year we'll be free. What's this bread of poverty? You know, certainly, whatever matzah it is, cheap it isn't. So, do we mean it's the bread that impoverishes us? No. In what sense is it the bread of poverty? It's simple. Today, when you go to the supermarket and you buy bread, there's so many varieties. Different sorts of grains, with yeast, without yeast, with sugar, without salt, without raisins, with cranberries, without. Matzah is as simple as bread could be. It has two components. It's an easy recipe, flour and water. Maral tells us that matzah is meant to be pashut, it's meant to be simple, to be simple. Two very different ingredients that combine and become one thing. Flour symbolizes everything that's physical. It grows in the earth. Water symbolizes everything that's spiritual. It descends from the heavens. The soul, the body, they become one in the way that's most simple, least complex. We have to approach Pesach with simplicity. And in this regard, the leader of the Seder is compared to the Kohen Gadol, who had to enter the Holy of Holies, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, wearing simple white clothing. What is there about simplicity that has anything to do with Pesach? Simplicity means bitul hayesh, no self. What's so bad about self? In fact, without self, we know nothing. In one of Reb Nachman's stories, I'm not going to tell the whole story, there's the following sequence. There were two children who were exchanged at birth, sort of like the prince and the pauper. Okay, one was the child of a nobleman, the other one was the child of a peasant. So the peasant child grows up in the palace, and the noble child grows up amongst the peasants. Neither of them is happy. The meaning of this part of the story, is that Yaakov and Esav are in reverse roles in the world as it is now. They have the power. They have malchus, they call the shots. And they're not happy in this world because on the deepest of all levels, they would want to be led in a spiritual sense. We follow and we're certainly not happy. So these two children end up, for various reasons, again, I'm not telling you the whole story, they end up escaping their lot and they're in the forest to climb trees to save themselves from the wild beasts at night. What's this part of the story about? This part of the story tells us that when we try to figure out who we are, we want to go back to being ourselves, which is what liberation is about. We come to the forest of the wild beasts. What are the wild beasts? There's a very interesting Sefer Musar called Cheshbon Nefesh. And he begins by talking to us about the animal side of who we are. Animals have no ambition. There's no such thing as an elephant that wants to be anything other than an elephant. They have no yearnings. They want to be what they already are. This passivity is the enemy. It can kill us. So in our story, Brooke and the tree, anything but the animals. You know where the animals live? In us. The Balei Mussar would say, in our hearts, we have a whole menagerie of takers, biters, screechers, whatever. We all know who we are. So what keeps us from moving, what keeps us from discovering ourselves, is that the animals are so vivid to us. We're all aware of our own failures, our own disappointments in ourselves. And the more focused we are there, the more we just see the animals as being vivid and real and encompassing, the more paralyzed we are. We're up in the tree. Okay, next part of the story. And again, I'm skipping parts. The noble son comes down from the tree, discovers a gem. Multifaceted gem. What gem is that? Okay, this stone is one in which he could see everything. There's a part of us that's full potential. We could see everything. But we have to believe in ourselves. We have to be able to say, if there's something in me that even succeeded once, that's proof that success is within my reality. So sometimes in order to see the prisms of light on the stone, we have to look hard, we have to hold it up to the sun. But there were all things we could look at ourselves and say, yeah, I'm okay, I've done that. We don't break Shabbos on purpose. We don't do whatever we don't do. Everyone knows who they are. But everything that we do is a proof of who we are. It's not the animals who are proof of who we are. And we could be whatever we want to be, because if we've gone through this trial or test, we can go through another trial or test. So a person could even say, I'm not going to get angry. Now, of course, today nobody gets angry. I just noticed that recently. I knew for a long time that nobody hates anyone. When people describe their feelings towards other people, they say, not my type. I just can't be with them. It's too much. Okay, but hate, nobody hates. Of course, in halacha, the words they're using are the opposite of love, so it is hate. Another word that people stopped using nowadays is anger. Nobody's angry. People are stressed. So, you know, you go to the street, at the bus stop, before the bus even comes and stops, everybody's stressed, everybody's angry. You can make a decision, I'm not going to be angry. And Hashem will help you. You could be whoever you want to be in steps and in short. What does this have to do with anything? Why am I talking about this? This is contingent on simplicity. This is contingent on saying, I am who I am. I want to approach you in simplicity. Help me. So getting this level of siyata dishmaya at the Seder begins by our saying, this is the matzah. This is it. This is my statement. My statement is simplicity. Now, it's a little bit strange to be inviting people at this point. Okay, so the idea there is that obviously our guests were invited already, and this is just a ceremonial invitation. But the underlying idea is that we have to be committed to imitating God, not reliving our own lives. We have to be committed to change. And indeed, the greatest difference between a Jew and a non-Jew is willingness to change. The animal self is passive, as we see in Cheshbon Nefesh. The spiritual soul is active and wants to give. So we begin the Seder by an invitation. Okay, next we have Manishtana, the four questions which no child is ever going to ask. Do you ever, imagine a child actually asking this. How come we're eating chametz and matzah? So far we didn't eat anything. Okay, how come we're eating maror? We didn't eat maror yet. We didn't dip it all, let alone twice. What's this about? And we don't actually even find in the whole In the whole Seder, we don't find explicit answers to the Manishtana. Meaning, the answer to question one is this. The answer to question two is that we don't find that to be the style. The idea in Manishtana is as follows. One of the mystic names of Hashem is Ma, the one who brings forth questions. Manishtana has to do with our looking at paradoxes. Chametz and matzah. Dipping out of pain, dipping for freedom. Living lives in which there's paradox. Eating matzah, the sign of freedom. Okay, that fits with the night of Morar. Kula Mesubim, that fits with Morar. That fits with tears. We live lives that are paradoxical. So the first thing we have to realize is that we have to search. We have to search with open hearts. An open heart means saying, I don't know. Let's look at some of the approaches. So the first answer that we begin with, although the answers are implicit, just like in life, when we search for Hashem, our answers are always implicit, not explicit. Okay, Avadim hayinu l'paro b'mitzrayim. We were enslaved to Paro. The word Paro is related to the word parua, which means wild. What's wild? The letters of the word Paro are also the letters of the word Oref, which means this part of the head. This is the Oref, back of the neck. That's where involuntary motion comes from. Thought comes from here. Things like swallowing, breathing come from there. Paro took us to the world of the subconscious. The world where there are no moral choices to make. The place where thinking rationally is irrelevant. That's where he took us, and we were enslaved there. So, because of that, the Mekubalim say that the Egyptian exile was the exile of Da'at, the exile of really knowing who we are and what we're here for. And we were enslaved to that. We closed almost all of the doors. How did Hashem get us out of there? So it says, B'yad chazaka v'zro netuya, strong hand, mighty outstretched arm. These are, of course, metaphors. But as Rahman points out at the beginning of the Moreh, the reason why we have these metaphors is so that we understand them, not so we just say, oh, that's a metaphor. So let's look at arm and hand. The arm is what we call the source of gross motor action. Think of the biceps. The hand is fine motor action. Think of picking up a pin. What Hashem enacted in Mitzrayim were huge miracles. These miracles showed us two things simultaneously. One is that Hashem is there and could break all of the rules. That's the outstretched arm. But the other is Hashem could differentiate between this person and that person. Hashgacha pratit. So what got us out of being enslaved to Paro, to having no identity, we're seeing the Yad Chazaka and Zro Netuya, and if Hashem didn't take us out, we'd still be there. Now, when people hear this in the Haggadah, they say, what do you mean we'll still be there? It's thousands of years. We would still be enslaved to everything Paro was. Whether we'd physically be in Mitzrayim or not, I don't know. Would we be enslaved to Paro? Yes. Would we be in Mitzrayim in terms of what Mitzrayim represents? Absolutely. The physical place, I don't know. What does Mitzrayim represent? The word Meitzar means narrowness or straits. Egypt didn't seem like a narrow place. It seemed like a wide place, a place where everything is possible, a place where there are no moral strictures to hold you down. There's nothing more narrow than a wide place. This world is called Gesher Tzar Ma'od, a very narrow bridge. What does that mean? That means that if we want to take charge of our destinies, we have to walk without fear on a narrow bridge in which a misstep throws us back into a different kind of consciousness, into failed consciousness. We end up thrown to the animals. Of course we can get up from there, but it's a narrow bridge. In Paro's Egypt, there was no narrow bridge. Everything was wide open. All the possibilities were equally as good morally. we're close to that in the external society. We need Hashem to pull us out. We're not going to get out through our own wisdom. We're not going to get out through our own knowledge. We're not going to get out through our own age. Okay? We need Hashem to take us out. But we have to realize we do have wisdom, we do have knowledge, we do have age, and we should use this to tell the Exodus story. Now people say, but I know the story. I know the story. The truth is nobody knows the story till the end. Because the story is about the revelation and concealment that leads us to exile. And until we're redeemed, we don't know the story. So the Haggadah begins the narrative of the story by introducing us to five Chachamim in Bnei Brak, of course in Bnei Brak. They were able to talk about this story the whole night. So on a simple level, this means they were talking about the episodes in Egypt, the miracles. On a deeper level, they were able to say the Shema with a different level of devotion by the morning. They saw Hashem's unity more clearly. So, therefore, we have the drasha. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, I'm like a man of 70 years, and I still didn't get why we should talk about the Exodus at night. Why? Because we didn't leave at night. Why are we talking about it at night? So we have the answering drasha. It says, Kol Yemei Chayecha, which includes the night. Okay, Yemei Chayecha, not only these days, but the days of Mashiach. What's going on here? We live in a time of night. If the room that you were sitting in was completely darkened at this moment, everything would still be there, but you wouldn't see it. So similarly, we don't see. We don't see clearly. So why are we talking about Yetziat Mitzrayim at night? And the answer is that night includes the day. What does that mean? That means, to quote Maharal, the Exodus was part of the redemption. Meaning, the redemption just wasn't a step away from enslavement, but the enslavement was a step towards redemption. How so? So there's a rule in human consciousness, which is we don't figure out who we are a lot of the time until we know who we're not and what we don't want to be. What they learned through those years of enslavement is who they're not and who they don't want to be. They don't want to be Egyptians. They don't want the mentality of Egypt. They don't want narrowness. Excuse me. They don't want broadness that's really narrow. They don't want liberation that's really enslavement. They don't want freedom of thought, if that means that one is a slave to one's subconscious. They don't want it. That's what made them free. The rejection is what made them free. The inspiration for the rejection came from above, but we wanted to be who we are. Okay, we go on. We say, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, blessed is Hashem who's called the place. Blessed is He. Baruch Shenatan Torah L'Amo Yisrael, blessed is He who gave Torah to His people, Baruch Hu. Keneged Arba Banim Dibra Torah, the Torah speaks parallel to four sons. The wise one, the wicked one, the simple one, and the one who can't ask questions. What's this about? Okay, Hashem is willing to take us out of exile. The way He took us out ultimately is through the Torah. Without the Torah, we'd still be wandering in the dark. So the Torah addresses itself to everybody. These four archetypes are everybody. The fact is that all of us have all four sons within us at different times. There are four different levels of awareness. Some of us are more aware, some of us are less aware, but sometimes in the same day we could be more aware and less aware. Okay, so Chacham, Mahu Omer, what's he saying? Okay, so the first thing to notice about the Chacham is that what he's going to say is, what do the paths look like? Ma'edut ha'chukim ha'mishpatim. What are they? Okay, so he wants to know how to get from where he is to where he wants to be. So notice why he's called Chacham. He knows where he is, and he knows where he wants to be. Let's define wisdom. The word Chachma is a contraction of the phrase Koach Ma, the potentiality to say Ma, what is it? What is it and what is it, and what is it for? Not how could I use it, not how does it feel. What is it in essence? Okay, so the answer we give is very strange. Okay, we tell him the laws of Pesach, until Ein Maftirim Achar HaPesach Afikomen, that after Korban Pesach, we don't eat anything after Afikomen. So the idea is that ultimately we have to come to devotion, to not saying, to not speaking. Afikuman, that which comes forth is from Hashem. Okay, so we come to looking for a higher awareness, but wanting to channel it. That's what marks a Chacham. Now let's look at a Rasha. Remember, the Rasha lives in us also. What does he have to say? He says, Ma avodah hazot lachem. What's the service to you? So notice he doesn't call this halacha. He doesn't call it the way to walk. Because he doesn't see himself going from one place to another. He calls it avoda. He has no destination. He's living in the absolute present. Anything that takes him beyond immediate gratification is avoda. It seems senseless to him. Ma avoda hazod lachem. Why are you burdening yourself with seeking? So we're all familiar with the famous parable. The tzaddik and the Rasha died the same day. Okay, they're both given their rewards. But they meet each other. So the tzaddik is taken to this like huge Mount Everest of merit. He's on top of there. He has a panoramic view of the whole world. The Rasha is down there in the pit, in the mire. The Rasha asks the tzaddik, how'd you get there? How'd you get there? He said, you know, to tell you the truth, I didn't see myself getting there. I never had a sense of what the top of the mountain was. But I followed the path. I put one foot in front of the other, and here's where I am. And he turned to the Rasha and said, why are you down there? So the Rasha said, I saw the top of the mountain. The path there is overwhelming. So I stayed where I was. So what's the difference between the tzaddik and the Rasha? The Rasha sees only the top of the mountain. The tzaddik sees only the path. The tzaddik is willing to live in the world of process. The Rasha is only willing to live in the world of product. Now, we use the word Rasha pretty casually nowadays. So the question is, what do you actually have to do to be a Rasha? So Rambam gives us four criteria. A Rasha is somebody who actually transgresses halacha, not just didn't live up to your expectations. The halacha that they transgress has to be one that even in their time and place is viewed as very reprehensible. And nowadays that would be, let's say, like molesting a child. Not only does the Rasha do something that's against halacha and in his own time and place is viewed as terrible, he does it publicly, pridefully, repeatedly, and knowingly. What's this about? Why would a person do that? So I'll tell you what motivates people oftentimes. There's a condition of being called pesha, which is, it's one of the categories of sin. It's a sin of rebellion. Why do people rebel? So in order to grasp why people rebel, I invite you to be 15 again. But not just any 15, obnoxious and difficult 15. I was obnoxious and difficult 15. So when you're obnoxious and difficult 15, if your mom says, put on a coat, what do you say? If you're cold, you could wear a coat. I don't need a coat. You walk out into the blizzard with your shirt sleeves. When you're 30, if your mom says, put on a coat, you look out the window, see that there's a blizzard, say, thanks, Ma, I could have gone out there with nothing. What's the difference? A 15-year-old thinks that somebody could deprive them of their identity, so they're fighting for their identity. A 30-year-old has an identity. A 15-year-old, because they don't know who they are, define themselves through saying, no, I'm not whatever it is you want me to be, that's what I'm not. A 30-year-old has a sense of who they are. Okay, when people become Rishayim, it's because they've lost themselves. It says that a Rasha is under the control of his heart, his emotions dictate, he's reactive. That's how he comes to call this Avoda, because he has no desire to walk a path. So it's because he's taken himself out of the group, he's Kafar Be'ikar. What does Kafar Be'ikar mean? It means that he has denied Hashem, who's considered the most essential thing, the Ikar. He doesn't see that there's a mountain that was created by a creator. So what do you do with him? So it tells you very strange advice. It says, Hakei et shinav, grind his teeth. Grind his teeth? Let's think about teeth for a moment. The function of teeth is to take something big and to reduce it to being something small. That's how we eat. Concerning the Rosh, it says, until Shinei Rishayim Shibarta, you Hashem have broken the teeth of the wicked. What do the wicked do? They take the ideas that are big and beautiful and trivialize them until they seem like nothing. Break his teeth. Don't let him trivialize. How do you take that away from him? This is what you say. Ba'avur zeh asah Hashem li b'tzeiti b'mitzrayim. You know what? You know why these halachas are important? Because it got me out of Egypt. It got me out of living a life of constraint. It got me out of fantasy world. It got me moving. It saved me. Leave it alone, and this happened to me and not to you because I walked the path. Ilo haya sham lo haya nigal. If you were there the way you are, you wouldn't have been redeemed. Okay, once we tell them that, then the Rasha, and this means the Rasha within us is also silent, the reactive self. Who do you want to be? Not who are you reacting against. Who do you want to be? Everybody is different, and different people find themselves in a state of reaction against different things. As a teacher, every so often, I teach in Neve primarily, so in Neve this doesn't happen so much, but in other schools, I find myself fighting the battle of the centimeter without wanting to be in that battle. So I'll tell you how that battle works. Where's the shoulder? Where exactly is the bone? Is it here? Is it the top of the bone? Is it the middle of the bone? Is it the end of the bone? Where does it say bone? Okay, how tight is tight? Like, what about something that isn't like skin tight, but is okay. I have no patience for these questions, and I want to tell you why. It's not because I'm better than the person who asked or more knowledgeable. It's because the questions are coming from the assumption that the mitzvot are enslaving the person. They're coming from the perspective, and the Rosh lives within all of us, within me also. Ma avoda zot lachem, what are you doing this for? It's avoda. The only answer is it's not avoda, it's halacha. It's what takes you to where you want to be and to who you want to be. We have to learn to silence the Rasha within us. The Rasha flourishes where there's no self-esteem, when he's afraid to walk the path. So we also have to learn to silence the little critic. Now we get up to the Tam. Tam says, Mazot, what is it? The Zohar says that the word Zot is a hint at the Shechina, the feminine aspect of Hashem, who could be called Zot and not Zeh. So what does he say? Where's the Shechina? So there are two approaches to this. One is he wants to have religious experience without having halacha. So you have to tell him, "B'chozik yad hotzianu Hashem mi'mitzrayim mi'beit avadim." Hashem took us out with a strong hand. Yes, he displayed miracles, but he was taking us out to somewhere. There's another perspective. The other perspective is that the Tam that we refer to here is an innocent Tam, a truly innocent Tam. Okay, who was called Tam? Yaakov was called Tam. Ish Tam. What does it mean, Ish Tam? Simple. It means being the same person in and out. The same person when you're at home as you are when you're with people who you view as being important. The same person outside as you are inside. Inside as you are outside. That's Tam. Here's what would never happen to Yaakov. Okay, I have an answering machine on the phone. And I like very simple messages on the answering machine. I don't think when somebody gets a wrong number, they want to stay on the line for 5 minutes until they can give their message. I like to say, "Hellers, please record." My kids, when they were young, conversely liked amusing and interesting messages like, "Ha ha ha, you've almost gotten to the Hellers, but no, no, no. Nobody's going to answer." Things like that, or Metropolitan Opera. So I'd erase their messages and they'd erase mine. So once they had a particularly long and, convoluted message, so I erased it. But I got busy with something else, so I forgot to record a message. So the tape recorder inside the phone recorded what was going on in the house. Now, you know how when you do something really idiotic, people are afraid to tell you because it's like so embarrassing, they don't want to embarrass you? So I don't know how long this was on my machine. But this is what people would call up and hear. "It costs money! If you worked, you wouldn't do that." Now imagine calling somebody and this is what you hear. "What costs money? Your call?" So that's what wouldn't happen to Yaakov, because he wouldn't talk differently in the house than he would outside. I told this story, and another woman told me the exact same thing happened to her. It was a bit different. She's not good at technology. Her kids are. So they erased the message, left the tape recorder on, and they recorded a screaming, howling baby, which also wouldn't have happened. Somebody would have picked up the baby in Yaakov's house. But in any case, being a Tam is being complete. So from that perspective, is that we have a relationship to the simple self that says, "All I really want is to know you, Hashem. Mashcheni acharecha navutza. Pull me after you, we'll all run." She'eno yodei lishol, the fourth son. At patachlo. You have to open him gently, which is why this is in feminine. Okay. He doesn't have anything to ask. In today's world, most people are incapable or unwilling to ask about Hashem. I don't know how many, if any of you, try to work in Kirov. The big enemy in Kirov today is not heresy. Nothing will bore people more than long-winded arguments about the age of the earth. Unless they happen to be biologists, but this is not most people's issue. Other issues that don't interest anybody is social justice. These are issues that are out. The enemy in Kirov today is apathy. When you have people grow up in a society in which God is irrelevant, then you're up against a hard wall. So the only way that you could wake somebody up is gently telling him, this is my experience. This is how the mitzvot gave more meaning to my life. This is how I got out of Mitzrayim. But you have to be gentle. What does being gentle mean? Means realizing that the people you encounter are hungry. When you encounter a hungry person, you don't yell at them for being hungry. How come you don't have, okay. You give them something. So if you can give them something of yourself, that's a great gift. Okay? Yechol b'Rosh Chodesh. You could think that the time for saying the Haggadah should be at Rosh Chodesh. Why? Because that was actually the beginning of things starting to move. Talmud Lomar Bayamahu, but it says on this day. Ibiyamahu Yechol Be'od Yom, but it says this day may be daytime. Talmud Lomar Bavur Zeh, but it says, for the sake of this, Bavur Zeh Lo Amarti Ela B'Shash Yesh Matzah Moro Menuchim Lefanecha. You can only say it's for this when you have matzah and maror in front of you, when you're about to do the korban. What's this about? Okay, you could think that the whole process of redemption should be celebrated from Rosh Chodesh, when we had the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, that in fact is one of the things that made us redeemable. We had a mitzvah, we sanctified time, this is huge. But it had to wait to the actual day in which our enlightenment was grounded. We actually had the Pesach Matzah Maror in front of us at night, and we were carrying it with us during the day. Okay, what does this mean? So, be a Jew in Egypt. You have to take the lamb and tie it to your bedpost for days. This is in the face of being in a place where people worship lambs. You had to move away from rational thought into a state of submission to Hashem. If you could be in that state, then you have the answer to all four of the questions. All four of the questions are answered by make yourself small and submit and you'll see great light. Interestingly, what happens next is we're going to have the whole story beginning from a negative point of view. We begin talking about Terach. Now, nobody ever talks about Terach Avinu. Have you noticed this? We talk about Avram Avinu. Why are we talking about Terach? So the idea is that we do have unholy beginnings, and that what life is about isn't perfection, it's about process. So for Avraham, he didn't just like pop into being all-knowing. He had to decide who he wasn't and then find who he was, and this is true for all of us. Okay, this is repeated by Yeshua when we came into the land. We were told that we began with Terach, and that Hashem took Avraham and gave him the land, and it was given from there to Yitzchak, to Yaakov, and Esav was relegated to Har Seir. So the idea is that we all come from the same place of negativity. We all come from Terach. Why is that important? The reason why this is important, that we acknowledge this, is as we said, that we see ourselves as moving from a place of continual definition of self. This progress is what all of the subsequent exiles are about. We're told that the Egyptian exile was prophesied as being 400 years. In fact, if you count from Yitzchak's birth, you get 210 years, which is the amount of time they were there. But they thought it was going to be 400 years. And in fact, we're told it could have been 400 years. There are all different ways of counting where things begin. Could have been 400 years. But we couldn't bear it. If we would have been able to stay in longer and to bear a little bit more, then we would have gone through all of the tikkunim, all of the rectifications. And the final redemption would have been that redemption. There would be no further need for redemption. Why am I stressing this? The reason why I'm stressing this is that sometimes we feel our lives are unbearable. We can't take another year of this. We can't take another dose of this. But the fact is that every year, every day in fact, takes you to a new place, not only of saying yes, but also of saying no. The ability to say both yes and no, yes to inspiration, no to what we have to reject, is what our purpose in this world is, each person in their own way. So we then praise Hashem for keeping his promise to us, the promise he made to Avram and Brit Ben Hapitarim. Okay, and Hashem said in this promise that you'll be enslaved and afterwards you'll go out. Now notice, this was an answer to a question. It says, Vayomer Avram, Yodoa Teda, Ki Ger Yezaracha. He said to Avram, you shall surely know, and know again, that your children will be strangers. That's an answer to a question. The question was, Bama Eda, how will I know? So the answer is that Hashem will intervene in our history so that we'll be able to discover who we're not, and from that place, discover who we are. Okay, at that point, we cover the matzah, and we lift up the second cup. The first cup was Kiddush. Okay, the word kos is an interesting word. In Gematria, it's 86, which is the same Gematria as the divine name Elohim. The idea is a cup contains something. It holds it. Similarly, the name Elohim, which connotates din or severity, contains things, gives things structure. It brings things down in a certain sense to bite size, where we could live with them. If chesed was, if there's just outpouring and outpouring, we wouldn't know where to put ourselves. Okay, so we lift up, when we lift up the kos, it's like lifting up Hashem's presence within us. The name Elohim is the same gematria as the word hateva, nature. Nature is the container. We see Hashem's divinity through nature, but it also conceals him. So the first cup is the cup of Hotzeti. The second cup is Hitzalti. These two cups have to do with from. Hotzeti, Hitzalti. I've taken you out of, I've rescued you from. The second two cups are going to be towards. But at this point, part of the Seder, we're still towards from. So we begin looking at our history all the way back from Lavan. Okay, why from Lavan? Why there? Okay, so it says, Tzev Lamad. Ma bikesh Lavan hara milasat Yaakov Avinu shepara lo gazar ela zecharim v'levanim bikesh lakor et hakol. Lavan wanted to destroy everything. Okay, how did he want to destroy everything? Where do we see that he wanted to destroy everything? So we see this in the interactions that he actually had with Yaakov, where he tried to force her into marrying Leah. He knew that that wasn't his zivug. It wasn't innocent. He knew. He was a great sorcerer. He wanted to destroy the Jewish people, maybe Koro, from having Yaakov marry the wrong zivug at the wrong time. So through this, he wanted to destroy everything. Paro didn't have that clarity. So he tried to destroy that which he saw as being the heart of what the Jews are. Okay, so from that perspective, he wanted to forget Hashem, forget our tradition, which was brought through the males. He did this through the enslavement. The idea being, keep people so busy that they have time for everything except knowing who they are. Now, an interesting thing is that we do this to ourselves. Okay, we lose track of who we are and what we're in the world for. There's a famous story. It was a king. And the king had a dream. And in his dream, he saw that there was a disease that was spreading amongst all the crops, some sort of a plague, that made all of the grain poison. So he called his prime minister, who was a great sorcerer, a great magician, said, what can we do? The grain isn't going to be edible. We don't have anywhere near enough in the storehouses to feed everybody. So he said, here's what we have to do. Let's look and see exactly what the effect of this grain is. You're saying it's fatal? Let's check it. So he checked the grain, and he discovered that the grain didn't kill people. Did something else. Gave it to the animals. The animals went wild. They became crazy. So the king conferred again with the prime minister. He said, this grain makes people crazy. The effect is insanity. Acid grain, whatever. So they now had to confer again. They can't. It's not a death sentence. but everybody will be crazy. So, so he said that, all right, let's save some good grain for us. But he said, but if we do that, if everybody's crazy and we're sane, they'll think we're crazy. And who knows what will become of us. So they decided that what they have to do is the following. They said, we'll both eat the crazy grain, the grain that makes people crazy. But I'll tell you what we'll do. I'll make a sign on your forehead. You make a sign on my forehead. So at least we know that we're crazy. Nobody else will think that they're crazy, but we'll know the truth. Why am I telling you this? The reason why I'm telling you this is when we look at what it was to be working all day, what kept us was at least we knew that this was crazy. How did we know it? It says we had the merit that we didn't change our clothing, we didn't change our names, we didn't change our language. We at least knew who we wanted to be. So we named our children names that had meaning. We spoke a language that had meaning. We wore clothing that conveyed a message. The message was, you're in a crazy world. You may be crazy, but there's something else. So when the Midrash tells us this, they didn't name their children, they used Roman names as example. Rufus, they called them. Reuven. We should put this to our own lives. People will often say, so what's so terrible about, and then you could just fill in anything. Arguably, the most controversial issue of life within the observant community is where do you close the door? What do you let in and what do you take out? So for some people, the door is very widely open. For other people, they try to keep it as closed as possible. So I'm not going to take this one on. It's a huge controversy and I'm not going to take it on. But what I will say is, even if your door is only open a little bit, realize that we all breathe the air. And the air tells us to be crazy. So we have to have some sign for ourselves, whether it's clothing or language or name. And name means your identity, and clothing means your self-expression. Let's not fool ourselves. Language means how you communicate. We have to have signs for ourselves to tell us who we are. Taking this further. Yaakov went down to Mitzrayim. It says, Anus al pi hadibur. He was forced by Hashem's word. Meaning, there was a famine. He had no choice. Yosef was in Mitzrayim. They don't want to starve to death. How was it for them when they went down? They went down in perfect faith. So it means even though Yaakov never would have chosen to leave Eretz Yisrael and go to Mitzrayim, when he was forced down by Hashem, he had perfect faith. And it says that they went down singing, believing, even though they were facing exile. So we have to realize that we are in exile and it's good for us. It's good for us to know. Okay, what happened there? It says, V'yagarshem, he did not intend to stay permanently. Okay, we came down very few. Shivim nefesh. Who were these 70 souls? These 70 souls parallel the 70 nations were mentioned at the end of Parshat Noach. The 70 souls, which in turn parallel the 70 faces of Torah, are the source of all the Jews who will ever live. They're the source of everything that gives us connection. So the idea is that when we came down to Egypt, we came down whole. We came down almost in a state of continued feeling, continued connection. Without that, if any one of us wouldn't have been there, the lack couldn't be made up. So we have to realize that each one of us is part of a puzzle. And that Hashem communicates to us through this puzzle. You're probably familiar with the idea that there are also, that come forth from these 70 original souls, 600,000 souls that are like roots and branches on a great tree. The parallel term, the letters in the Torah. So as you know, if letters are missing in the Torah, the whole Torah is puzzled. So the question is why? So the idea is that the Torah is multifaceted. It reveals the truth of everything in creation. It tells us how God can be found in creation. So concerning this, we're told that the Torah is just one divine name after another. If one letter is missing, then the divine name is broken. Each one of us has an aspect of divinity that nobody else has. Part of getting out of our own personal constraints is validating other people's divinity and seeing our own. What happened next? We became powerful. We multiplied. Okay. How much did we multiply? So we're familiar with this, that it says each woman had 6 children at a time. So Maharal talks about why 6. They could have had 10 children at a time. 6 children is just a random number, apparently. What's wrong with 5? What's wrong with 8? So he tells us that the number 6, and later the number 600,000, has great value in terms of what it symbolizes. But in order to understand the significance of the symbol, let's go back to what we're talking about. We're talking about, again, discovering who we are through what we're not. This is what our entire discussion was this evening, or this morning for you. Who aren't we? We aren't just bodies, souls. We have to keep moving. We have to stay alive. We have to have goals. We have to be willing to work the process. The number 6, which, by the way, in Hebrew it's shesh. Each shin has 3 crowns, so it's shesh. You know, 3 and 3 is 6. It's a nice thing to notice. Everything physical has 6 sides, the 4 sides and up and down. The idea of having 6 children means that they were multiplying with astounding rapidity on a physical level. But what made them redeemable is that they continued multiplying with that level of fertility spiritually. Again, their names, their language, their dress gave every one of these children an identity, so they were going somewhere. Okay, we're going to now move to the part of that guide about how bad was it. Okay, so again we have the number 60 involved. So 60 years before the actual Exodus, the beginnings already started. Okay, it says that's when Moshe went down to his brothers and saw their burdens and empathized with them. Okay, so in Shemot Rabbah it says that he was 20 at the time. So since when he came back he was 80, that means 60 years before they knew. There are those who maintain that he was as young as 12, which would mean it's a bit more than 60. But there's still, it was still happening. And the person with a sharp eye could have seen it. What did Moshe see when he looked at them? Okay, what he looked at them was, what he looked when he saw them is they couldn't interpret their suffering. They didn't know why they were there. They could see what was happening and they didn't see where it was getting them. Okay, so in Ma'am Lois, the author tells us that he would speak to them words of comfort and consolation, that he would give them a sense of their purpose. Okay, what they saw when they looked at themselves was that they weren't worthy, and in truth, at that point, they weren't. Okay, so what did Moshe do, and what should we do? So he found whatever good could be found in them and embellished them and gave them a way of relating to that. What did Moshe do for them concretely? And this is what we'll conclude with for this time. We'll continue the Haggadah at a future time. He gave them Shabbos. So we're all familiar with this, that he was still a prince in Egypt. He went to Paro. He said, they'll work better if they have a day off. Paro said, well, what day? And he said, Shabbos. And that's how we became Shomrei Shabbos, still in Mitzrayim. What's this really about? There are 2 ways through which we could reach Hashem. One is analogous to fasting, The other is analogous to eating. Fasting means by suffering until we finally see who we're not. We're not Egyptian. We're not what they stand for. We're not in Golas Hada'at. We don't want to live with our subconscious. We don't want to be narrowed by their kind of wideness. Lo zeh. But there's another kind. The other is through eating, through matzah, through saying this is who we are. We're simple, we're pure. The weekday is analogous to fasting. The time of lametet malachot, we're enslaved. We have to say no to half of what we observe. Anybody who's ever rode the train to work knows what I'm talking about. But Shabbos is the time of eating. As titaneg al Hashem. It's the time for simplicity, to the time for finding yourself, the time for rising above the lametet malachot, the time for letting Hashem sustain you. So it was this hope that Moshe gave them that left an imprint on them that was so profound that later when he came back, 60 years later, or maybe even more, they were redeemable. So part of our own current paradigm of how we live, in the conflict of being a person in the 21st century, of saying no, is we also have to say yes. We have to celebrate Shabbos with great affirmation, with joy, and bring other people to it. We have to accept people as they are. We have to accept ourselves as we are, whichever one of the four sons we happen to be seeing at the time. We have to be willing to be humble enough to ask questions so that we could see Hashem providing us with everything we have and everything we need, including the answers. We have to be able to approach all of this from a place of giving and not taking. And Be'ezrat Hashem, through this, will be worthy of redemption.